Hello, everybody.
Well, hello.
This is time for the post show after this show where we drink the beer.
So, chocolate milk.
Well, you don't want to drink chocolate milk right before you drink.
No, I don't.
Lambic. So after the post show, I'll give you a little shot of some amazing chocolate milk.
Amazing.
Amazing.
So you'll know if I'm amazing. Well, I guess you won't know, but Jeff will know if I laugh at it when I drink it.
It's harder to laugh at chocolate milk than a Burl Barrel.
This is true. This is true. There's something about alcohol that makes you laugh more. What else? What else you got on?
What else do I got going on?
Oh, okay. So this is the thing I wanted to bring up at the end of the pre-show. Who was it who sent the email? Was it an email or a tweet?
I think it was a database one? Or
no, it was... tonight's beer is
okay.
He said, because our last post show, I mean, we just put up our next show, but the one that was 180,
280.
Wow, I've been doing all this data on the show and I still didn't recognize it. Okay, so the one that's 280, the post show was 1 hour 40 minutes. And he's surprised that there was no code word. And,
I'm kind of surprised there was no code word, too.
We were just kind of, we were like, we didn't even realize at the time that it went that long. And then when it happened, it was like, wow, okay, it's already midnight. I kind of justified it by saying, well, maybe the code word is that there was no code word and that you know that. So,
you win.
Yeah, you win. That was a very interesting post show because that was the one time I can remember Jeff getting really pissed at me.
Oh, was that the one where I was got
for something that was really pretty minor in the scope of things, which was I didn't think that I thought a digital speedometer was just as reasonable.
No, I didn't get pissed about that part.
Yes, you did.
I was making an argument there. No, I got pissed about.
You said shut the fuck up.
Well, I wouldn't say that if I was really pissed at you.
You wouldn't?
No.
You banged on the table and said, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, because I was having fun angry. No, well, the times I got really pissed at you was a couple weeks earlier. Was that about the Bitcoin? Or was that about
you got really pissed at me because you were quiet. That's why I know Jeff is really
pissed. So there was two things that... There was the Bitcoin thing. Pissed me off. That was the only time I got pissed off. Okay. But then there was also
I forgive Jeff for getting pissed off because I was being very much a dick. I was absolutely being a dick at that point. I was being a huge dick. I was enjoying myself, but I was being a dick. Other people pointed this out to me on Twitter. I'm kind of, I'm not saying let me put it this way. I'm not condoning my behavior, but I'm not condemning it either because I... It was fun for the time, but I respect Jeff way too much for me to really do that to him often. Let's put it that way. I enjoyed the fact that it was pissing Jeff off probably a bit too much, but I was having fun with that.
No, I wasn't pissed.
I don't regret it.
I wasn't pissed about the digital speedometer. I thought you were just being...
obstinate?
Obstinate, yes.
Yeah. That's not me being obstinate. It's just me and you having a totally different view on the way that those things work.
I just think you don't get it, man. You just don't get it.
Exactly. I don't get it. That's exactly the problem. I really don't get it. You can say that about a lot of things. So...
No, I wasn't pissed about that. The only other thing recently that, I don't know if pissed is the right word, but, you know, we had a disagreement on whether someone who chooses to, like, not work at all should be, taken care of.
You got pissed off
at
that?
No, I wouldn't say pissed off was the right word, but we had a disagreement that we weren't going to...
We had a disagreement that wasn't going to be resolved easily. Yeah. But, no,
I don't want pissed off to be the word. I was trying to think of the two things, and that was one of the two things, was like, you know, if you're going to choose to work in a trade that doesn't have any economical value, right, then why should everyone take care of you? You know, I'm pretty...
Because it's the right thing to do.
Oh, see, this is where we're going to disagree, I think. You know, if you just want to be a poet and you think you should be able to be taken care of by just writing poetry all day that no one's ever going to hear or buy, then why should you be taken care of?
Well, then you think they should die on the street?
I think that they should have to not be a poet and do something else.
Why?
I don't think we should take care of people that
want... Why not?
Because it's capitalism, and you need to do something that's marketable.
Well, that's the thing. That's my objection, is that the premise that what is marketable is necessarily good is a faulty premise, I feel. So you're saying that what is marketable is the only thing we should value in society. And if you cannot do something marketable, or you choose not to do something marketable, whatever it is.
My job is lighting farts on fire.
Then you are determined to be not valuable to society, and not just not valuable to society in terms of making money, but not valuable to society at all.
No.
And you should simply be cut off from it.
I'm saying if you want to choose a life where your job is lighting farts on fire, yes, instead of getting a real job.
What qualifies as the real job?
A job that is marketable, that someone will pay you a wage to do.
So what is beneficial to a certain population of people?
It's just economics of survival at that point.
Yeah, it's survival, exactly. So you are saying that people who choose not to do what is profitable in some way deserve to not be supported in any manner whatsoever.
Deserve, I think you're using as a loaded term there.
Okay, what would you say? I'll use your word if you like.
How would I want to say that? I would say that society that we live in is built around the economics. The sustainable.
You really think that the entirety of society is simply the economics of it?
That's what makes it work. That's where it makes it sustainable. Or sustainable might not be the right word there. You're putting me. You're so much better at arguing off the cuff than I am.
I want you to think about this. I'm not saying I'm going to convince you now. I'm simply saying I want you to think about the idea that people should only be valued for the amount of wealth that they generate.
No, you're making it. You're using words to twist it. So let's just say,
if you believe that, then tell me where I'm wrong.
Well, I would say the words you're using sounds like you're twisting it. Where you could also say, and maybe I don't know how you're going to reply to this because I haven't thought it out fully, but you know, you put in a hard day's work, putting in a hard day's work of pumping gas or bussing tables versus putting a hard day's work of lighting your farts on fire are two completely different things. One is marketable, one is not.
Right, marketable. So one generates wealth and the other does not. And we should value that which generates wealth over that which doesn't. Sure, I understand
but
that we should value
you
that.
But living costs money, so you have to generate wealth to support your life.
We live in a society that is overwhelming amounts of wealth. We have enough wealth to easily pay for all the people who want to fart for a living and still live exactly like we're living. We have plenty of wealth.
Well, I can't argue on that whole point.
We do not live in a society where we are living day to day, every single person, and that if somebody does not, you know, do what needs to be done, then the entire society will fall apart. That is not the society. We live in a society of abundant, overwhelming wealth where we can afford to allow people to do what they want to do. And if that's lighting farts, let them light farts. Now, we're not saying that you're going to get a Jeff farts to accentuate the point. I'm not saying you get a penthouse in Manhattan for lighting farts. You certainly don't get a penthouse. You get a shitty apartment, a one-room apartment, maybe, with, you know, or maybe a studio. But, you know, you get fed and you get a roof over your head. That's it. That's all I'm saying. You get fed and you get a roof over your head, and maybe a little extra, so maybe you can have a weekend beer or go out with your friends. I'm not saying that you get luxury for farting. I'm just saying you get to live because we can afford it. Because it's not going to hurt us to allow you to live, and because you are valuable just being a person. You are valuable simply being a human in society, because that is how we work. We're evolved primates who need society around us. Everybody around us influences us. You are a person. You deserve to have at least some bare minimum of things that we can afford to give you, because we are we have an overwhelming amount of wealth.
My viewpoints have become much more liberal than they were when we started the podcast, mm-hmm. much as yours. I haven't gone as far. Okay. I think if you want something, you need to provide something. I don't know.
I think that is a...
You need to try to provide something. At least try to provide something.
I don't think that there's a person in the world who doesn't want to try to provide something. I don't think you will find a person in the world who doesn't.
But you're making an argument about people that want to do something that provides nothing.
No, I'm making an argument of people who want to do something that...
You're using examples of people that want to provide nothing.
I'm making an argument that people want to do something that isn't necessarily marketable, isn't necessarily going to generate wealth. And if that's the case, people shouldn't be forced into doing something that they hate, that hurts them in a way... Because they have to do it. People shouldn't be forced into that situation when there is no reason to force them in a situation other than this weird work ethic thing that we've come up with to explain why some people get rich and others don't, even though it's much more of a lottery than anybody would like to admit.
I don't know. I can't go that far. Maybe I could definitely go as far as, okay, you don't want to work a job? Do some community service. Do something that's beneficial to the society.
I think, if I had my druthers, I would love to do this show for money. I would love it. I would work 20 hours a day on the show if I could, because this is the most fun I have. It's simply not a way we can make money. So we're looking for other options. If everyone had their druthers, there would be a heck of a lot of cool culture going on. Because everyone wants to do something. It's just not everyone wants to do something that's profitable. I don't think that in the society we live in, we have to make sure everybody does something profitable. Especially the way that people in the very high echelons are manipulating that money.
I can't argue about that part. You're not, that's not a direct argument.
No, that's not a direct argument. That's an accentuation to the argument. But Jeff is absolutely right. I'm shifting the goalposts. I'm putting in a red herring at this point. That's the reason why I think how I do locally.
Sure. I am not arguing that the rich are too rich or anything like that. I am just looking at a specific case of someone who wants to be a slacker and not
I don't think anybody wants to be a slacker. I think that people...
But the argument you're making is using examples of people such as... I made up the example of lighting your farts on fire, but the argument you were making a couple weeks ago was equivalent to that.
No, I'm making an example of people who are disillusioned with the system and therefore don't do anything or do nothing, or sit around and do nothing. I think that if people are inspired in some way, and everybody has something to offer, I think, and so... That just doesn't necessarily, what they have to offer is not necessarily going to be something that is profitable, that makes money for people. There are people who are just driven and that's what they want to do, and that does make money, and let them at it. Let them go for it and let them get the benefits of doing that. Let them get the luxuries they want for having that attitude. I'm all for it. let you get as rich as you want, let you get a penthouse in Manhattan, absolutely. Let you go on a Coke binge on a yacht, go for it. I'm not opposed to that. What I am opposed to is the idea that then we should simply discard people because they don't do something that is profitable.
Okay. I mean, if there is the surplus that you say there is and this can be covered, then I would be more amenable to it. I don't have the numbers. I don't know. All I have is your argument that saying that there is the surplus. And sure, tax the ultra rich, whatever. I'm not protecting the ultra rich. I don't know. It's just I don't know the economics, whether there is a surplus to cover all the slackers.
This country makes so much money, it's obscene.
I don't show and me the data.
And the amount of people who make the most of that money, the tiny amount of the people, is obscene. That's a different argument. But people like Bernie Madoff made billions with a B off of simply being a parasite on those rich people. That billions would sustain everybody.
I don't think you have enough data there, right? I mean, I think, you know, I would need to see the data before I could be swayed to your argument.
All right. It's available for you. And if you would like to correct me and or show me something that is in, I will look at it and I will, you know, adjust my argument accordingly because I believe that data is paramount. Absolutely.
How much assistance should the government give to a person who is not doing anything?
The government should give a home.
What number? How much does that cost? What's the number? How many $1,000 a year should they give?
I believe the government should give a base income to everybody of probably around, in today's dollars, $30,000.
All right.
Everybody past a certain age, right? So everybody above 18 should get $30,000 a year. I think that would give, it's an economic boost, right? Hey, you're just putting money into the economy and then people are going to buy things. And B, that's given enough people enough money to live on and to purchase things.
So what that equates to is that's giving everyone an hourly wage of $14.42 an hour.
Sounds about right. Sure.
I mean, and the number sounds right.
Yeah.
It's seeing where things stand today with minimum wage and
$7.
Right. So, I mean, there's a lot of obstructions to go from where we are today to what you say.
Yes. there's no way you're going to go from where we are today to my ideal. No, my ideal is absolutely ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Compared to what we have today. I still think that is the way to go, but that's not going to happen.
You know, Obama is hoping for 10-10. You want to give him 14-42.
Yes.
And for not working.
For not working, yes. Yes.
So, yeah, you're pretty far off.
I'm pretty far. Yeah, well, I mean, I said it on Twitter, you know, I think I'm a socialist now. I'm not a communist. I don't think everything should be equal. But I think that everybody should have the you know, a bare minimum plus a little bit of assistance. You know, you could argue, you could niggle a little bit on the number. You could niggle down to, say, 30 or, say, 25 or something like that. You could probably find some way to justify all of it. But, you know, this is not, by the way, new. Nixon was considering a national income. Nixon.
$25,000 would be $12.01 an hour.
Yeah. Yeah, I can even see, even down to 20, you know, just something.
I can't argue because I have no idea how the economics of the data works out, right? Like, where do you get the revenue from to pay for that? You know, it's...
Well, let's see.
Does the burden seem fair across the way? You know, like, sure, the ultra rich are getting a hell of a deal after the Bush years. I don't dispute that, right? It's, but I don't know enough about it to say whether, yes, the revenue comes from here, and that is reasonable. I don't know. I still have a strong feeling that what I already said, you know, I'm much more liberal than I used to be. But I still have the strong feeling that you should work where there's demand for yours. You know, you need to have a marketable skill. You need to work in the market. You just can't write poetry or light your farts on fire and expect to get a stipend for it.
So the number for that value times 350 million, which is roughly the amount of marriage. Now, obviously, not everybody would get it, because kids wouldn't get it and stuff like that, is $8.75 trillion. It's a large number. It's larger than our GDP. So the number would have to be adjusted if that were, you know, the full thing. But I feel like there's a way that you could give, you know, maybe you don't give it just, you know, if you certainly just gave that to families, for example. But then there'd be less incentive for people to become families. Because, yeah, so there's obviously things to work out about the situation. I don't think that there's going to be a number. There's going to be, just like, you know, there are varying levels of assistance that you get under welfare, under...
Well, how many unemployed are there now? That's an easy number to get, right? 6 million? Something like that?
6 million? Are there 6 million unemployed?
That rings a bell. That rings a bell. I listened to NPR. 6 million rings a bell.
I'm sorry, that was 35 then multiplied by 350. So 30, what did I say? 30, 30 times 6 million. Well, that's 18 billion, right? You know, 180 million. Yeah. Wait. Hold on a minute. I'm not doing my math right.
I think 6 million is a good number. I'm trying to find more.
1.8 billion.
Yeah, I can't find the number quickly. That's why we need a production assistant for the show.
1.8 billion. That's
yeah, I mean,
not a lot.
Sure. Sounds reasonable if you can get. But we've already talked, you know. Now the liberal me comes out saying that, you know, the system's fucked up. The system is almost irreparable. I dare say irreparable at this point, right? It, you know, the fall of Rome, the fall of the Greeks. You know, it's going to be the fall of America/capitalism because...
Yeah, it's going to happen.
It just...
It's destined to happen. I mean, these things don't last forever.
Yeah, it's just,
to paraphrase Eric Hoffer, every great cause starts as a movement, turns into a business, and devolves into a racket. We are in the racket stage.
200 years was a nice run.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a nicer run than most. Hey, it may keep going as a racket for a while. It may keep going for 100 years. But it's a racket at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's clear to anybody who objectively looks at the evidence. It's a racket. So, my ideal is that you replace society with a society where no matter who you are, you benefit. Right? You want, if you're going to design a society, then you want to design one where you don't know where you're going to be in that society. So you want there to be a benefit no matter where you are in that society.
So hard, right? I mean...
Yeah, of course it's hard.
Communism's fallen apart in most places.
Communism, we've seen... We have lots of evidence for communism doesn't work.
Does it not work because... So here, why does it seem that corruption is more adherent in communism than in other. Maybe it's not, but it seems that way, right?
I think that...
It seems like corruption is more rampant in communism.
Here's my thoughts on the matter. I think that corruption is going to happen.
Well, corruption's crazy in Arabic cultures too, right? I mean, so it's not just communism. I mean, corruption is... that's an interesting question. How do you characterize where corruption is?
So the problem with communism is the ideal that everyone should be equal, period. Everyone should have equal stuff. Well, the problem is...
The people enforcing that equality.
Exactly. Who enforces that? Well, you have to have separated class enforce that. And then they decide that they get to be, you know, have better situation. And so it simply becomes totalitarian by inertia. Right? Capitalism at least gives some, you know, at least particularly when it starts, gives some bit of meritocracy to it. But again, only that which is profitable.
But there's an inertia there too, right? Yeah, I mean, absolutely. We're certainly in inertia phase.
It's just a slower burn. It's just a slower burn than communism. It's, so... There is no system that we have that's perfect. Why should there be? This is not a world that allows for perfect things. This is not a universe that allows for perfect things. So we just try to find that which is most sustainable and keep that going. And we try to find that which is, because we're humans and because we want us to succeed, because that means that we are succeeding. If everyone is succeeding, that should mean that we are succeeding personally, because we care about that kind of thing, because we're different than many other animals.
The problem is life costs money, right? And you have to have the money to support that life, right?
Life costs resources.
Well, sure.
And the way we have structured society, resources cost money.
Well, yeah, I mean, at this scale, it costs money. There's no other way to do it, right? I mean, there's
no other way that we found to do it efficiently. But to say just pure that life costs money is not.
If you Walking Dead the shit out of this, and you know, population is decreased by 90%, then resources might cost something other than money. But at our current scale, resources cost money.
Well, in the current situation, resources cost money. Yeah.
I would say there's no way to change that without a drastic population reduction.
The central problem of economics is, how do you deal with limited resources? That's the problem of economics. People have won Nobel Prizes not for solving a problem, but for elucidating more things about that problem. That's the interesting thing about problems that become disciplines, right? Science could be considered a problem that's become a discipline. The problem is, how do things work? And discipline is, okay, well, this little thing works this way, this little thing works this way. But how does everything work? No, we don't have an answer to that. We have a kind of tentative answer to a lot of it. And we sort of think that a lot of these things arise from other little things that we've found out, but... And even then, we're talking about situations that we've mapped out. You know what? I was thinking about this argument. This is sort of a little bit off, but not quite. I was thinking about the argument that some theists make, which is that this is the presuppositional argument, where they say, well, you don't know for sure that anything, like if I toss a baseball up, you have faith that it's going to fall down. You don't know for sure that it's going to fall down. You just have faith that it is. And the typical answer to that is, no, I've experienced that it will fall down. That experience has never been challenged before. So it's not that I have faith. It's just that that the preponderance of the evidence supports it. I think that there's a better answer to that, actually, which is that, no, I don't have faith that the ball will fall down. It's just that in my model, which is... on the Earth, with this universe and this gravitational constant and, you know, this sort of acceleration on the baseball in that model, it's absolutely 100% certain that in that model, the ball will fall. Now, if you change something about that model, then all things are out the window. But in that model, absolutely certain, no faith involved, because that's the way that's the way the system evolves. We know that for a fact. The system evolves in that way. The Hamiltonian, you can run it backwards, you can run it forwards. The system will evolve in that way, period. It's no faith involved. It's not even belief involved. It's just, I've modeled the system. That's how it works. If you're going to change the system on me, then yeah, I don't know. But that's a ridiculous assumption to make. So that falls back onto, you know, all the science is making models of systems and then assuming, for good reason, but assuming that those models hold true throughout history and time.
Yep. Amazon Anonymous?
All right, Amazon Anonymous.
Get past that whole argument that I really didn't want to get into.
I have two things to bring up.
All right, I want to bring up the SE Watch Repair Kit.
Okay.
Someone bought the SE Watch Repair Kit 16-piece for only $6.19. Well, shit, I don't want this item. They didn't make me any money at all.
What do you care about what makes money?
No, I'm just teasing. One wristband link pin remover, one watch band holder, one spring bar remover, three pin punches, one metal plastic hammer.
That's pretty good for $6.
Yeah, it actually is. 16 watch repair tools. This is a new set of 16 watch repair tools. You receive one three slotted screwdrivers, two Phillips screwdrivers, one case wrench, one pair of long nose pliers, one side cutters, one pair of stainless steel tweezers. 3.5 out of 5 stars with 138 customer reviews. Let's see what the reviews have to say. Great little tool set. Poor quality tools, whoever does the job, is the critical review. Okay, that's the most recent review. Let's see. I needed to readjust my watch, but didn't want to pay $20 at a watch jeweler, so instead I paid $11.21 for this kit. Current price at the time with free ship from Prime. So he forgot to mention he paid $79 for an annual Prime membership. Or soon to be $99 for a Prime membership.
That's what I wanted to get into, but okay.
Sorry.
That's all right. No, we can get into that now. Somebody did buy on through us an Amazon Prime membership. They bought it before it switched over. Now it's $99.
So it already switched?
Yeah, it switched over. Technically, it doesn't switch until April 17th, but new members get a mandatory 30-day free trial. So,
okay.
So it's already switched over at this point.
But we could still renew now early? But
yeah, we're not new, so you could still renew early and get it for
$79.
Mine renewed in December. Yeah, I think December.
So it doesn't make sense for you to get a couple of months.
But you know, I think Amazon Prime is great, especially with a lot of Amazon stuff, and you get access to a whole bunch of movies and stuff in addition to just the plain old, hey, I get shipping for free on anything, even if it weighs a lot.
Did we get any kind of earnings on the Amazon? Oh, okay. So there you go. Everyone who's an Amazon Prime subscriber, renew now using our link.
There you go.
How much?
We got about $5 out of that. That's a 79 version, so we should get more out of the 99. So hey, you know,
renew now.
You have
craftbeerradio.com/Amazon.
Yeah, you have to pay money to Amazon for something. Might as well give them a little bit less and give some to us.
Exactly. Pay 79 instead of 99 and give us $5 out of that 79. Oh, too bad we didn't know that for the main show. We could put that in the ad.
Yeah, you know.
We can still do it next week, right?
We can still do it next week, yes.
Okay.
As long as you get it out before April 17th.
Okay, the pros of this watch kit. Plenty of tools that come in handy. Was able to get the job done. Not too expensive. Roughly $10. Cons. Poor quality tools. One of my tools broke after one use. but you get what you pay for. Didn't bother me as much since they provided spares for the part. No instructions. There are videos, tutorials, and websites. Even though the tools are poor quality, they are able to get the job done cheaper than going to a jeweler to do it. So this guy's being kind of critical on... You're paying $11 to $16 for a 16-piece watch kit.
People are going to be critical on anything, aren't they?
All right, what's your pick?
Okay, so my pick is the PB2 Premium Bundle, powdered peanut butter plus powdered chocolate peanut butter. This is...
What was your search parameters? I don't see that.
Last 7 days earnings.
Why is it not listed under orders?
I don't know.
Huh. Yeah, I'm looking at the orders report.
Maybe
for the
it, maybe we got the earnings late.
Huh? Maybe.
Yeah, because this is actually sold by a different company and fulfilled by Amazon. So, this is basically it's they take like peanut butter and or chocolate plus peanut butter and they remove the fat from it, turn it into a powder, and then you can use it, add it to water and use it. It gets a 4.5 stars or the 5-star review says unfreaking believable. He was highly skeptical because he loves peanut butter, but he's a paleo and peanut butter doesn't fit with that. Based on the omega-3-to-6 ratio and being a legume, I'll go on the paleo diet or whatever. He says that his first taste was a revelation, amazing, mind-blowing. I couldn't comprehend it. And then this is all in caps and with periods after every word. It tasted like peanut butter. So there you go. It tastes like peanut butter. I can't think of a better endorsement than that.
For peanut butter powder.
For a peanut butter powder. It tastes like peanut butter.
I got a really good peanut butter upstairs. Where'd Heather get it?
Bring it on. This actually goes well with this.
You want me to go get it?
Yeah.
All right. Hold on a second. Okay.
I got to use the facilities anyway. All
right.
You expect the bread, so I was...
All right, we're rolling again. So the peanut butter you're looking at is the peanut butter crema since 1898, natural. The ingredients?
Chunky, by the way.
Yeah, chunky, very chunky. The ingredients? Peanuts. That's it.
That is exactly what should be in peanut butter. Now, what do you find so amazing about this peanut butter? I'm curious.
I got a mouthful of peanut butter. Hold on a second.
Mm. And bread.
And bread. I don't know. I've had other naturals that are more gritty. This one has a creaminess to it, like the name would suggest. And the big chunks, there's tons and tons of chunks in here. I just really like this peanut butter.
It also says... No added salt, sugar, or hydrogenated oils. Now, if I'm completely honest, you could use a little bit of salt.
Okay.
But it's very good.
No. It's better than Jif.
Yeah. Even though Jif is kind of like Hellman's in that they have a product that they make that's not really pure,
mm-hmm.
but they do a good job with it. They make, I mean, when I think of mayonnaise, I've tried other mayonnaise other than Hellman's.
Mm-hmm.
And if I had to pick a processed mayonnaise, I would absolutely pick Hellman's because it's by far the best of the mayonnaises.
I don't think I've ever tried another mayonnaise. I'm trying to think, what are some other brands?
Like Kraft. Well, no, is Kraft? No, Kraft is not Hellman's. Kraft. I think Heinz makes a mayonnaise. There's Value Time, right? There's mm-hmm. Hellman's makes by far the best product mayonnaise. But nothing's as good as making your own mayonnaise. And it's easy. Mm-hmm. God, is it easy. A little bit of mustard. Or mustard powder. oil and eggs and a little bit of salt and a little bit of sugar. Boom. Mix that together. And you got mayo.
I mean, other than a rare occasion where I've gone to a fancier restaurant that makes mayonnaise, I can't think of any occasion where I've had anything other than Hellmann's.
You ever made your own?
No, I haven't.
You should.
I should. You know, we had that argument a couple years ago about Kraft ketchup, right? And I was arguing that there could be. It's an easy bridge over to mayonnaise, but I just had never... I mean, I know about making your own mayonnaise. I know about places that make their own mayonnaise. And I've had some mayonnaises that have been pretty damn good, but I never really inquired into their origin, right? And I'm one of those guys, I'm a Pulp Fiction guy who likes mayonnaise on fries, you know?
Oh, absolutely. That's... I think the culture's coming around to that. But, yeah, a sugary, a sweet, slightly vinegary tomato sauce on fries is not anywhere what fries deserve.
Mm-hmm.
A layer of fatty, eggy, slightly sourness with the fries, perfect. You put sour cream on a potato. You don't put marinara sauce on a potato. Fries are potatoes. They go well with something creamy.
Makes sense. However, I've been known to, since ketchup is pretty much, you know, low fat, things like that, I've been known to put ketchup on, baked potatoes.
It's high sugar. It's super high sugar.
Well, but it's less fat than butter and sour cream,
What is ketchup on potatoes? Is that any good?
On baked potatoes? Well, yeah, it's good. This peanut butter, it expires September 22nd, 2014. It expires this year. So, you know, it's a fresh, single-ingredient product.
Or it's old.
No. Well, it could be, but no, it has one ingredient. How can it have a shelf life, right?
I don't follow.
Single ingredient. No preservatives. No preservatives. The name suggests that they're needed to preserve a item. Eat your food fresh.
How long does a nutmeg last? A long time.
Yeah, but that doesn't have the oils. Oils can rancidify and things like that.
It does have oils, but it's just you're not.
Well, like peanuts can get rancid and stuff like that. They can oxidize, things like that.
That's true. Peanuts have more of the type of oils that can go rancid, more easily available to be oxygenated. Mm-hmm. And nutmeg. So there's that. But there must be things that also don't go bad. How long does cinnamon last for? It has oils.
I don't know how to argue that one. It's I don't know. I mean, I've had almonds.
Does water go bad?
I've had walnuts go bad, right?
And yeah.
Things like that, right? So.
Yeah, nuts can go bad.
I mean, because of the oils, right? I mean,
yeah,
cinnamon.
I think it's nuts and oil. Because peanuts aren't nuts. I think it's that kind of fruit in particular that can go bad. But other things don't necessarily go bad. Like, certainly water doesn't go bad. I mean...
Yeah. I poured a little bit of this lambic. That's going to be quite a jump from the...
Yeah, it is a little bit of getting your mind used to it, but...
this is that Timmermans we drank last week. That stuff was wonderful. I saved it just because I knew Greg would appreciate getting to taste it again.
So, you know, it's almost like it's almost like a lemon lambic, you know? It almost has that kind of flavor to it. You wouldn't be surprised to hear there were lemons in here, because it has coming through.
Oh, it's so good. Damn. That's good. Good, 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 good.
Good, good, good. So what else is going on, Jeff?
Oops. What else is going on? Just watching some shows. You know, same shows I talked about last week.
I want to get into Hannibal because I've heard so much good things about it.
Hannibal?
Yeah. You don't know about that show?
No.
It's on NBC, so of course you don't know about it because who watches NBC? No one.
Who watches network TV?
No, yeah, network TV is a dead medium held up by one or two tent poles. You know, so Community last week got a 1.1, which is better than it's been doing the last couple of weeks. Got a 1.0. Why did you get a 1.1? Because it wasn't up against the Big Bang Theory. but still, got a 1.1. American Idol used to be one of the hugest shows on TV. You know what American Idol got? A 1.9. American Idol is not long for this world.
There's no must-see TV anymore, huh?
Well, there is, like I said, tentpoles. There's Big Bang Theory. Gets 15 million viewers, something like that. It gets
is 2.5 Men still on?
Yes.
Is it? Okay, I mean, I haven't heard about it at all this fall.
Well, I mean...
Winter.
It doesn't generate headlines because Charlie Sheen is not a part of it, and it's not the most popular show anymore. Big Bang Theory is.
Okay.
But there, like I said, there are a few broadcast TV tentpoles, and everything else, really everything else besides a few tentpoles, is a niche audience. And the sooner networks realize that, the sooner that they'll be in a situation.
You know, I've been wondering, like, is Allison and Max ever really going to watch primetime TV?
Well, are they ever going to watch real?
It's a new definition no matter what, right?
They'll watch the Super Bowl, but that doesn't.
Yeah. I mean, it's a new definition no matter what, so it's kind of an unfair question, I guess. But, like, are my kids as teenagers going to want a television in their bedroom?
They're going to want a computer in their bedroom.
Right. They're probably not going to want a TV.
No, I doubt.
Actually, Allison right now at 6 years old wants a TV in her room. But I'm almost surprised at that. But I think after, you know, 5-6 more years, she's not going to want a television.
Once she realizes she can get all that stuff on the computer, then she's just going to want a computer. I
remember getting the TV in your room? I mean, how what a big deal that was?
I didn't get a TV into my room until it was late teens. Late teens. My parents wouldn't allow it.
I probably got a TV. So my first TV in my room was a black and white aerial, you know, antenna TV that my mom had when she was 20 something, right? And really I could just watch PBS, you know, like Channel 13, you know, QED, PBS, maybe the UHF's, you know, the Fox, what was going to be the Fox station. And there's really no reason for I'm trying to think what age it was, but why would you watch any of the network channels, you know, on a black and white TV over the air at that time?
I think it was a junior in high school when I got a TV.
How old was I? I have to ask my mom if she probably doesn't remember things like that. How old could I have been? Maybe 14. 15.
Lucky. I didn't get a Nintendo until my bar mitzvah, until I was 13.
Yeah, I didn't get a Nintendo early. I mean,
I had a computer, so.
Right. I mean,
it was a family computer, and that was the most one we used the most often.
What was it?
It was a XT. It was a IBM XT. Okay. 8 megahertz with a 20 megabyte hard drive. And
wow, it had a hard drive. Whoa.
Yeah. And 640K RAM.
So, I mean, so here's my computing history. Got Atari 2600.
Well, my first computer was actually a TRS-80, our first computer was a TRS-80.
I had a 2600 Atari. Ages are kind of fuzzy. I'm not sure what age, right? And then we did get a Nintendo, but it seemed like 3 years after my cousins had had one, right? Go to my cousin's house and play Mario Brothers and track and field. Mm-hmm. You'd have to run back to run. You'd have to A, B, A, B, A, B, A, B, A, B. Yeah. So like I remember my cousin would bring down one of these the little hair bands with the, like the marble thing on it, you know, like the plastic, like, you know, they'd have the, it'd be like a bolo type thing. Like it's a hair band with like the two plastic marbles on it, okay. You know, and you'd wrap one through the other loop and that's what would give you your ponytail. You'd take that plastic and use that to go, hey, baby, hey, baby, and run on track and field. So we didn't get the Nintendo till much later. Probably got the Tandy Color Computer 3 for Christmas 1 year with a cassette player.
That's the same thing as the TRS-80. That's what it was.
Well, actually, it's a little more advanced than the TRS-80, but...
That's what we... I mean, it was called a color computer, but it was also called TRS-80. At least the one we had, so...
Yeah, okay. No, ours was the Coco 3. So, it was like the version after that. Or okay. Two versions after that.
Just a keyboard.
So, I had the Coco 3. With a cassette player. And there's a funny story there because do you remember the Rainbow magazine?
No.
So radio, there was the color computer magazine called Rainbow. And it was a monthly magazine or whatever. And it had code published so you could transcribe the code by hand, type in this program. Could you imagine like a 12-year-old trying to transcribe a program in BASIC?
Yes, I can, because I did it.
I didn't do it very successfully. but there was also, you could order, you know, archives on tape, right? And they come in cassette tape in the mail. And this is funny because of the mindset of 12-year-old or whatever it is. I ordered, they had kind of like arcade games and adventure games, right? So I ordered the adventure tape, and most of the games didn't work because the tape had been magnetically damaged in the mail. Today, as an adult, you write the company and say, the tape was magnetically damaged, please send me a new one, and you'll get a new one, no big deal, right? Yeah. As a child, you're like, shit! Like, I wasted like $8.
Uh-huh.
On this damaged tape, what do I got to do? And there was games where, like, I could do is, you know, a C load and then try to load it, like, and it would get almost to the end, it would fail.
Mm-hmm.
And I would rewind it, and I would do a C load, and after 8 times, maybe I'd get the game loaded. And, like, I'm like, idiot! Just write the company and get a new tape. It doesn't cost them anything.
They stored... Yeah, I remember that. We had a tape player that connected. That's how it stored data. Save data on in audio. If you played it on a regular tape player, I tried it. Because why not?
Well, you could do that. You could like unplug the computer from the tape player. Yeah, and you could listen to it.
But you could
hit play and kind of hold down the fast forward button, and you could hear and listen for the silence, right? So instead of waiting 20 minutes to skip to the right program, you could kind of jump, right? And, you know, so that was a trick I used. The next Christmas, I got the 5 1/4-inch floppy converter for the Coco 3. It plugged into the ROM port where all the ROM games went, right? And that made things a lot nicer.
Oh, yeah,
right?
Sure.
Because you actually had random access or, you know, seek access, you know, to a 5 1/4-inch floppy at that point. So I had the Coco. And then actually, you know, that was the last computer I had until I got a Pentium 90. So, like...
And I went to college, I think, with a Pentium 60, so yeah.
Okay.
I think. Could have been a 90, I don't know.
So, you know, and then shortly after that, like, so I got the Packard Bell Pentium 90, and then, you know, got on CompuServe, and then realized that CompuServe was CompuServe, and got on a local ISP, Nauticom, right? And I was doing web page stuff and all this stuff, and then, you know, shortly after that, in what, like, 97? Applied for tech support at Nauticom, went from there. So, and at that point, you know, it was really, you know, all the people working in tech at that point were pretty geeky, right? And many of them, you know, had 386s, you know, some had 286s, yeah. You know, they've been on the PC platform forever. So like, it was almost like I got a late start, you know, not getting onto a Pentium 90.
In a way that might've been helpful to you in terms of your current position, because you have a sort of different outlook on things. Cause you're less married to the platform. Me, I don't know. That made, yeah, that,
I'm
that
not sure. Me. I mean, that late start has long since dissipated. You know, I've more than made up with for it. But you know, I remember the first, you know, several years, like, you know, like everyone's talking about where they came from, you know, where the, how they grew up, you know, like, oh, I had a 286, 60, you know, 24 and stuff like that. I'm like,
so I can tell you,
my first computer had 4 megabytes of RAM. What? 4 megabytes? That's insane. My first real computer.
Yeah. Let's see. So we started with an XT with no extra memory, and a CGA monitor. So, mm-hmm. 4 colors. It also had a button so you could change the color of just text. You could change it to different colors. That was it was a cool monitor for the time. Managed to convince my parents to upgrade to EGA, to a 286, and then ultimately to also a 40 megabyte hard drive. I wanted this because I wanted to play Wing Commander 2, and to install Wing Commander 2, you need 20 megabytes. So we got that. By the way, the hard drive, the first hard drive at least, felt like it weighed 10 pounds or so and was about this long. It was about, about the length.
That of, is about the
length of, from your fingertips to your elbow.
26 inches.
Yeah.
28 inches.
You know, it was long. So we went from there. Then we got a 386. Was 386 the one that had a math coprocessor in it already?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. So that was cool.
That was still running MS-DOS?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, we were running MS-DOS, and I think I managed to finagle work Windows for Workers or something. I don't remember exactly what, but yeah, we're running.
I remember one of the first things I pirated was like MS Office over a 14.4 modem on FTP. I had to download like 1.4 meg floppy disks.
Oh yeah, yeah. I remember I got the beta of Windows 95 before it was out.
So the computer that I bought, the first PC my family bought, right, this Packard Bell, it came with Windows 3.1, but it was in the 95 launch period, so it came with an upgrade to 95. So, I mean, that's how late I got onto the PC platform.
Yeah, I was doing MS-DOS before that, and I had actually created for my parents. I remember adjusting autoexec.bats and stuff like that so you can get enough memory to play some of these like CD-ROM games eventually. Because you had to make sure, okay, well, if I don't load this, and I have enough memory to load my sound card and my mouse driver.
Could you imagine finding that information out without the internet today?
Jesus. Well, I did, so I can't.
I know, but you've forgotten what it took, right? I mean, could you imagine trying to dig up that information? Did you ever do any BBS work?
Yes.
See, I never did anything BBS-wise. Mm-hmm. I mean, my first online was CompuServe and then Nauticom.
Right? Yeah, I did BBSs because my parents at one point got it. I probably at my insistence got a 2400 baud modem, so that was good for connecting to a couple little BBSs that were around. Managed to convince him at one point to upgrade to a 9600
baud modem,
and then the next one was of course 56K.
You went from 96 to 56.
Yeah.
There was 14.4 and 28.8 and 33.6 all in there. You didn't have anything in between?
I don't think so. Although 14.4 sounds somewhat familiar. You may have had a 14.4.
14.4 had a long run. 28.8 had a long run.
I know we didn't do 28.
33.6 had a short run.
I'm pretty sure we didn't have 33.6. So we may have, you know, you may be right. Maybe a 14.4.
14.4 had a long run.
It was probably 2100 to 14.4. And then from 14.4 to 56K. That's probably what it was. Some of this minutia obviously gets lost in memory.
Right.
The Nintendo I had, is very funny because I got that for my bar mitzvah. That's what I remember. It was when I was 13. And I also got with it remember the NES Advantage joystick?
Yeah.
So
I never used it, but I remember seeing it.
Because I loved it.
And it looked like an arcade console,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. And then I didn't really like the Nintendo controller for when I went to other people's houses. I don't like this. I like my joystick. And other people hated it. You either hated it or loved it, based on whether you had it, I think, really. Based on whether you used it or not.
You ever have a power glove?
No.
No?
I played with the Power Glove, and it doesn't work.
I never used it. I don't know.
What was that? The movie The Wizard, right? With Fred Savage.
Yeah. I vaguely remember that.
They have the guy with the power, the kid with the Power Glove. He said, I love my Power Glove. It's so bad.
Marketing.
And it was so bad. Nintendo eventually did arrive at motion controls.
Mm-hmm.
As we all know with the Wii. And now they're pretty much done as a company in terms of it, because they decided to double down on what was a fad. They doubled down on a fad.
So I've been out of the gaming for, yeah, you know, since my kids have been born, so 6 years now.
I'm pretty much out of...
So you got the Wii, then the Wii U followed up, right?
Yes.
Do you know what the Wii U has?
The Wii U is, first of all, it's HD, so there's that.
Okay.
It's about as powerful as, I think, the Xbox 360.
Okay, well, that's decent. It's a generation behind.
Yeah, it's a generation behind, just like the Wii was about as powerful as
Xbox. But the Wii had... The Wii had a combination of nostalgia and just family,
yeah, no, the,
fun
the,
party.
The Wii had that casual thing to it,
yeah,
which was great for selling consoles. I mean, man, that thing did that.
The price was right, too.
Yeah, the price was right, too, but that thing sold like crazy. And for a year, you couldn't find it in the stores.
Mm-hmm.
But then you played it, and you put it down after 15 minutes, and if you were a console gamer, you played... The other consoles that actually had games, mm-hmm, instead of these little party,
yeah,
things.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's great for kids, great for people who just want 15 minutes of entertainment, but then you're paying for a $200 device that will give you 15 minutes of entertainment. I did it. I have one, even though I knew the games weren't that great at the time. It was a year after it came out. I was like, I could finally get one. So I got one. And I think my total time played on the device that I bought is probably less than 2 hours.
Yikes.
No.
My Wii was blinking at me a couple weeks ago, and it was a message saying, hey, we're discontinuing online support for just about everything for the original Wii console.
So the Wii U
They did update Amazon Prime on the Wii. It's actually a lot better. Like, over the last couple weeks, they updated the Amazon Prime app. It's a lot better than it was previously. It's still hard to use because you're using the pointer to point at buttons on a Prime player.
Right,
and it's horrible. But it's actually a lot better than it used to be.
So the Wii U, I guess the idea was, okay, we're going to make the console a little bit better. We're going to... make the controller, because the last thing was, okay, we're going to make the controller a little wand thing,
mm-hmm,
right? That and that will change everything, and it did, but it made it so that you could only really play simple games. If you really wanted to play a complex game, you needed to get the controller add-on.
Mm-hmm.
So they decided to make a controller that had the ability, but it was also this big thing that had a screen in it, so you could do a touch screen type, mm-hmm, thing with it. That's the Wii U.
Kind of to take on the, I mean, get some DS technology, I
yeah,
guess.
Really, yeah. They still obviously definitely own the portable market. No one buys anything else.
You don't think
PS Vita's out there, really. I mean, the only thing is...
What's
the
revenue versus iOS gaming,
yeah, iOS
and,
gaming
and Android
that's,
gaming?
That's true, but in terms of pure gaming machines...
Portable console.
Yeah, portable console. Nintendo is the only game in town. But
like I think
you
iOS
said,
is going to be changing,
yeah,
that.
Like you said,
soon.
it is a fleeting market at best compared to the iOS market. So the Wii U essentially came out and compared to really anything, no one bought it. I mean,
mm-hmm,
it just did not sell. And they dropped the price, I think twice, maybe only once. Maybe they at least dropped the price once on it, still not selling. Because there aren't really any games for it. I mean, there aren't any games anybody wants to play for it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you want to play those kind of cheap, simple games, you don't need anything more than the Wii. The Wii is already there. What do you need the Wii U for? I mean, at least PlayStation 4 and, you know, Xbox One have the argument that, look, it's much more powerful machine. You get much more graphics and cool stuff out of it. It's still, you know, ultimately another game system, but it's a much more powerful machine, and look at all the cool graphics, and look at how we can define the hairs on a dog. Right. You know,
I mean, I'm thinking, like, so maybe there's not enough market there to actually jump in. But imagine, and, you know, as one of the features in iPhone 6 or something like that, where it has AirPlay or HDMI out to your TV / projector and has games that, you know, are not PS4, Xbox One, but rather, you know, a generation behind on your phone, uh-huh, portrayed on your big screen.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's doable, right?
Sure.
And I don't know if the market's there for Apple to do it. But
some games, there's some games, or at least some, I know, like Google was advertising a website where you could take a Google phone, I think an iOS phone, and play bowling with it by...
Okay.
Using your phone.
As yeah, they got a good gyro stuff in there now. I forgot my laptop one day this past week.
Maybe it was skee ball.
On the way to work, I got to work. I look in the back seat. My backpack's on the back seat. Like, fuck, forgot my laptop. I left the house without my laptop. And it was one of those, you know, I went to set up, used a loaner for the day or whatnot. But I'm like, you know, we're almost to the point where it's your phone is your CPU. And it should be able to hook up to your interface at work. You should be able to hook up, you know, we're almost there where your phone's your CPU.
Well, I mean, think about the cloud. I mean, we've gone from the early days of computing, where mainframe computing, where you had a terminal, mm-hmm, to everybody has an individual computer, to there's a terminal out there, to there's a big computer out there that we all use sort of a terminal for. Mm-hmm. Eventually, the idea of your computer, particularly at work, will go away because you can just access your stuff wherever you are. You can pull up your desktop wherever you are. So
it would still be nice to have all the authentication and all the, you know, like on your phone, right? And then your phone just connects up to your terminal, you know? So, like...
Well, then, I mean, lose your phone, lose everything. I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing. At least the cloud gives you something. Yeah. If you lose
but I mean, like,
it's still
but your
there.
Phone still, you know, is the auth... No, I'm not saying... There's still the cloud component, but the phone is the authentication token.
Okay.
Type thing, right? Where you go to work, uses Bluetooth or whatever to connect to your big screen and your keyboard and your mouse, right?
And yeah, then, we're getting there to the point where you should be able to just put your phone
right there.
Right there, and your computer will be like, okay, now you're interfacing with your phone and your computer.
And your computer's not your computer, it's just a terminal.
It could be.
Right.
It's a little inefficient to do it wirelessly. I think that in terms of the physics involved, I mean, it's a lot. The physics in terms of direct connections is faster.
Well, power consumption, stuff like that. But I mean, but you could still dock it, right? You could plug.
Dock it is probably a better. Yeah, still, though, there's the physics of wires is still not quite as good as the physics of an internal circuit board and all this stuff. So I mean, you know, there's. In terms of data throughput, it's still a point where you still don't have a processor.
You know, I'm not talking. Yeah, I'm not talking about the special effects artists. Doing
or gaming,
stuff.
And you have to consider gaming a huge. I mean, a big part of where these things go. But yeah, just
I'm mostly talking
your basic
about
kind of Chromebook type things. Absolutely.
Speaking of Chromebooks, I was just looking at their stuff the other day. You know, I would really like to try a Pixel. Just to see what a Pixel's like, you know, the Google Pixel.
What's that?
The Chromebook Pixel, one Google makes, has a deeper screen resolution, higher resolution than Retina display.
Really?
Yeah, it's $1,500 for the Chromebook. So it's about.
It's
about
Glass
nine
too,
times more expensive than any other Chromebook.
Yeah.
But the screen, and it's also a touchscreen, right? So you can use his laptop. It's not a tablet form factor. It's not even a convertible. But you can, you know, work on your laptop and then you can grab the screen and do
stuff
like that.
I'm surprised that most laptops don't have that already, frankly. I guess it's hard to build capacitive touchscreens in this size. At least, you know, it's expensive.
So the Pixel looks neat, but the price is so high. But they have a 14-inch HP out now. And all the Chromebooks, if you're used to Mac build quality, all the Chromebooks are cheap. But the 14-inch is actually... I wish it was available when I bought my mom the Chromebook last year or a year and a half ago or whenever that was. Because I saw it online a couple days ago, and then when I was at Best Buy today, they have a Chromebook display, so they had it there. I'm like, that's decent. It doesn't have the MacBook Air build quality, but it's a 14-inch screen, and that's a lot better. The 11-inch screen that my mom's Samsung Chromebook has, she's fine with the Chromebook OS and everything, but for, you know, a near senior citizen, the 11-inch screen's too small.
Yeah.
And the 14-inch would be a big... It's only $179 for the Wi-Fi version of this 14-inch Chromebook. And Chrome OS is plenty for most
$179 for a 14-inch Chromebook?
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's pretty damn good.
Yeah.
You talk about MacBook Air.
So the more you pay for a Chromebook, the more free Google services you get. Like if you buy a Pixel, you get 5 years of 100 gigs of storage, right?
Wow.
But if you buy one of the cheaper ones, it's only like 1 year or 2 years, something like that. So,
you talked about MacBook Air. I wanted to bring this up because my MacBook Air that fell into the bathtub, Damien, for the hell of it, took it to the MacBook store. And he said he just wanted to see, you know, what they would give out to repair it. $800.
That's not too bad.
It's pretty rough.
Well, yes,
severe water damage is what they said. Yeah,
you think?
I could have told them that. Yeah,
you think? So they do things like give you I don't want to say a good discount, a heavy discount.
Right, I'm going to tell you something that I shouldn't have done, but I did with the MacBook. I feel real dumb for doing it, but it probably would have made it even worse. When it fell into the bathtub, I was like, no, 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 no. And then I thought, okay, oh God, there's water. What can I do? What can I do? Well, maybe I can burn the water off. So I put it in the oven on real warm for like 20 minutes. I just see what would happen. I took it out and it was like really hot to the touch. It's like, oh shit, that's really bad. So it could have damaged the screen too.
Yeah, the batteries would go first, right? The heat would hurt the batteries most, but the screen would be the next concern, right? Yeah, I mean, dude, just don't bathe with your laptop.
I wasn't bathing with my laptop. I was filling a bathtub and I had it on what is essentially a table, and I turned around haphazardly, and with my big
just
fat
like
ass,
how Han Solo killed Boba Fett.
Right, exactly. Yeah, pretty much. I killed Boba Fett. Boba Fett being my MacBook Air haphazardly by turning around and knocking it into the water.
Boba Fett's here. Where
knocking it into the Sarlacc pit that is the water. So yeah, it's the same thing. Yeah, in fact, it is exactly the same thing. Exactly, precisely the same thing as Boba Fett. So that's how I'm going to think of it now.
Max and I watched a half-hour YouTube video today of the top 10 things that the original 3 episodes of Star Wars got wrong. You know, it was an entertaining video. A little too many shits and fucks for a 3-year-old, but... you know, he didn't catch on that, I don't think.
Did you put up the show?
I should have. I tried to.
I just trying to download it on my phone. I don't see it.
No, wait. No. Because I... Hold on. It was waiting for me to type YES. Yes. Because I use SSH to push them up, and I had recently messed up my known host file, so I had to blow it away. So it didn't know the host. So yeah, the script that I ran was like, hey, do you trust this fingerprint? In the last 2 hours, 3 hours, it's been sitting there like, dude, answer my question.
That's the nice thing about my computers. I never do that. I never be like, dude, answer. I mean, unless the program ended that, but then we just like, oh, I'm waiting. So
it's uploading right now. But
that's cool.
I don't think the last 3 hours will really crimp anyone's time.
No, no, no. I just sometimes I download it because I listen to part of it just okay. I had the audio come out on the way home. I listened to that, so I was like pulling it up so I could listen to it. And
right.
Not showing up.
This video. You know, a lot of the things you'd expect, right? But there's some you know funny things. Some good kind of like Obi-Wan's an asshole. Like he lied to Luke twice.
Well, to be fair, Lucas didn't have the story done, so you know it's sort of after the fact thing. I mean, the Leia was not originally going to be Luke's sister. Vader was not originally going to be Luke's father.
Okay.
One of the
callbacks, you know, he kept going back to was, you know, he just really wanted to, you know, just shoot George Lucas in the head. But I didn't fact check this part, but apparently when he sold the rights to Star Wars to Disney, he donated $4 billion to charity. So you can't really yell at George Lucas anymore.
Sure you can yell George Lucas all you want. I mean, look at okay. So like I said, the Star Wars things. I didn't take the rest. The Star Wars things, the original trilogy. You can look at especially when he realized, oh, I have to make another one of these, because the first one didn't have Episode 4 affixed to it. I mean, there's stories that he wanted it, but the studio wouldn't let him. But later they let him put it on, like in the video. Mm-hmm. But it was a one-off. I mean, it was a very Joseph Campbell-y story. So when he had to fill in the gaps, they changed some things and filled things. But it's inexcusable what he did in the prequels, because there are lines in the original Star Wars where Obi-Wan's reminiscing about Anakin and saying, oh, Anakin was a good friend. It's you really don't follow that from any of what we see in the prequel.
Right.
And he should have known, okay, build it up as a good friend who was seduced by the dark side. That's not how it happens at all.
Yeah. There's some things in this top 10 things that's bad about the first three episodes or, the original three episodes, that I take issue with. They're talking about how, the Death Star, the vulnerability of the Death Star. Instead of spending the whole movie trying to track down the plans and get them back, why don't you just fix vulnerabilities that might be exposed by the plans? I take issue with that because it's just like computer security, right? You don't know what vulnerabilities will be discovered, So it's not like the plans say, hey, there's this thermal vent that you can shoot a torpedo down and blow up the whole damn thing.
It's just, they had careful analysis and they found one.
They found one, right. So it wasn't obvious.
And that was actually covered in the original Star Wars where they said, the guy comes and says, we've analyzed their attacks and there is a danger. So it's they didn't realize it at the time, but then they realized, oh, wait a minute.
Mm-hmm.
So that totally makes sense.
Yeah, so the guy, the guy who's doing this top 10 thing, that's the one that I have the most issue with. Another one was there's not enough female
characters. Supposedly, in the backstory, at least in the press notes for Empire, that flaw was fixed in the new Death Star. But it was incomplete.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why they were able to sell it. But that wouldn't have been present in the news.
But it was incomplete, but still fully functional, right?
Yeah, right, but it was... But if it would have been completely constructed, then it wouldn't have had...
Guy had a great point about Boba Fett. Boba Fett was, the most loved character. He's huge, like you said, last week, right? Hugely loved character, and they kill him in the first 30 minutes of Return of the Jedi. With a blind dude flailing around, right?
Yeah.
Wouldn't it make much more sense? You could have worked Boba Fett as... The Empire could have hired him to protect the shield generator on Endor or something like that. And then Han and Boba Fett could have had a fight. Han's not much of a sword fighter.
There was enough padding with the Ewoks. I don't know, more padding would have...
Well, fuck the Ewoks. But, Han's not much of a sword fighter, but he could have done some kind of one-on-one, battle with Boba Fett. No? You don't think?
I just think that is... That's nostalgia creeping back. I don't think that. Okay. I don't. I mean, one of the great things about the original...
Boba Fett killed nobody on screen. Nobody, ever.
Okay. I'm not going to argue the Boba Fett point, because it's silly that people have such an affection for a character uniform that didn't... that didn't do anything. But I'm not going to get into that. But,
yes, you are. Do it.
No. It. I just don't... Because I don't have much to say on it. But I think one of the great things about lightsabers in the original trilogy was that they're used very sparingly. Really, one-on-one fights are very sparing in the original. And when they happen, they're not these drawn-out, you know, acrobatic affairs. They are expressions of the character's emotions, as every action on film should be. So the character's emotions and motivations are expressed in this lightsaber thing. It's not wire foo, right? It's not, you know, oh, let's have a 5 minute or God in what was it, in Attack or no, in Attack was a Return of the Sith. It was like 20 minutes of them fighting lightsaber battling. Whereas, you know, a 2 minute fight would have accomplished exactly the same thing. And that's what,
you know, any touch of a lightsaber will practically incapacitate a person, right? Yeah. Because of, you know, the nature of the weapon. So I definitely hear you there.
I just think that, you know, fighting people who want more action, more movies where it's just action are boring. The
notion of the dark side, the guy had a good point about the notion of the dark side, right? Because in Return, when Luke, you know, takes down, you know, gets pissed off, takes down Vader and whatnot, you know, it's basically like, I was angry, but it didn't turn me evil. And if you look at the same thing in Anakin Skywalker in, you know, Episode 3, right? He, you know, slays Mace Windu, and then he goes and slaughters all the young Padawans. You know, he's evil.
I mean, kind of the point, you know, I'm being a little bit more forgiving than I should be, but the point of the last scene, you know, that scene where Luke is angry, is that he could get angry even though his teaching tells him not to. He did get angry. And if he was able to get angry and lose himself, then it wouldn't be that far of a stretch to have him lose himself in the lust for power. So that was sort of what the Emperor was kind of trying to demonstrate to him.
Right.
And then he looks at his hand and says, you know, I'm kind of becoming my father here. There's points to it. There's a point to him getting angry and him losing control. And the idea that losing control makes you powerful. See what it did? You defeated this guy that you could not even touch before because you were angry, and that made you powerful. And that was what the Emperor was trying to express.
Okay. And I really can't, you really can't argue the corollary with Anakin, because it's just so poorly written.
Yes. It is absolutely poorly written. And that's what the point should be, that this kind of going outside the lines that are prescribed for you by the Jedi Order gives you an immense amount of power. If you use the Force in these ways, you have an immense amount of power. Look at what you can do with this power, and that's supposed to be, or that is, I think, ideally the allure of the dark side. Not, oh, you just killed Mace Windu, well, you're stuck. Might as well kill some kids. That's just poorly written.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, obviously, a lot of the incontinuity comes from a penalty of their success, right? Like, you know, you look at Episode 3 where they're hiding. Like, okay, hide Leia with them, hide Luke with his uncle, right? I think Anakin Skywalker, Darth Vader, would look on Tatooine. And, and also the whole, you know, like they didn't want to start training Anakin because he was too old at 9 years old, right? However, you know, Obi-Wan would have known that, and yet he didn't train Luke for the first 19 years where he was, you know, several miles away.
Well, he thought, I mean, you can justify that. But again, those prequels are garbage.
Well, that's it. I mean, those arguments are all because of the garbage of the prequels, right? Yeah. I mean, you just have to, that's why you start at four, watch.
It's just like the Matrix sequels are garbage. Don't watch the Matrix sequels.
I was having a conversation with someone yesterday about, we talked last week about how the green screen work for Attack of the Clones is shit. It's shitty, shitty, shit, shit, shit. I'm like, you know what? I haven't seen the Matrix in forever. And that was really some pioneering green screen work, right? I wonder if it holds up. I wonder if it looks as good now as it did.
I think Matrix holds up.
Yeah, I haven't watched it in forever, but I do need to watch the Matrix to see if the green screen work looks real today.
First of all, it's such a compelling story that even if it didn't necessarily hold up, you'd forgive it. The effects, right? I mean, the whole point of Attack of the Clones and stuff was the effects, because there wasn't a story there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, when the effects stop holding up, the whole thing falls apart. But The Matrix is a very timeless story. Mm-hmm. So, of course, it holds up. Not only that, it's such an influential and really interesting movie. So... Mm-hmm. It has so much to offer. The Matrix is really, that year was a great year for movies. I think it was the best movie that year. I really do. I think it was, it would never have won the Academy Award, but I think it was the best movie of that year. It's certainly the one that's going to be remembered the most from that year, even though there were some great movies in that year.
No, I hear you. I hear you. It's a shame the sequels couldn't have been nearly as good.
Well, it's a shame that they, I don't know. I mean, the problem with sequels is
expectation.
Well, it was done, you know, it was said by Abed in the D&D thing that, you know, it always fails, mostly because when people try to do sequels, they either try to do an exact redo of the previous one, which is, for example, Ghostbusters 2. Almost scene for scene exactly the same, but, you know, changing some things, but you're missing the whole lightning in the bottles that made Ghostbusters awesome. Ghostbusters, a movie, by the way, that still holds up amazingly well.
I haven't seen it on forever. I'll have to watch it.
Watch it. It's just, it's brilliant. Ghostbusters is absolutely brilliant. You'll watch it. You'll be laughing out loud at things that you know are coming. And you'll see things that you didn't see before, like, you know, how great Bill Murray's performance is throughout the whole thing. Because when you're a kid, you're not really watching for that. But if you watch that now, you'll be really impressed. So yeah, watch Ghostbusters, fantastic. But there are sequels like The Matrix where, like, they pick one thing that they think is what it's all about. Like they thought the philosophy of The Matrix and or the world of The Matrix needed it. Expanding on, and I guess it could have been expanded on in many ways, but they took a tactic which was disastrous, just awful. And then anything that requires a guy at the end
to explain
it for 5 minutes is probably a poor movie. I'm just guessing that if you have to have a guy sit there and explain what the fuck is going on in the first hour and a half, you haven't done your job right.
I hear you. What do you think? Wrap it up?
Yeah. Midnight. It's now officially the 23rd.
All right. We will talk to you again next time.
Thank
you. Code word? You want code word?
Code word, Star Wars.
Star Wars. How about the fastest hunk of junk in the galaxy?
Just Star Wars.
Okay.